Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. I guess it's time for the Health and Science and Energy Show. Yes. I love hearing those whales and those dolphins. Those are the real things pre-recorded. Just love the sound of those. Anyway, we were talking about depression the other night. And I want to continue on with that. I don't feel that we quite got as far into it as I wanted to because I started late on my program. That was kind of embarrassing because the time had gotten switched. And I might do this for another show or two until I get it covered. And first I want to talk about it for a few minutes on the clinical side. And I've got some very special pet areas that I want to deal with. But first of all, I want to really have people understand how medical science came to really get into this. And I'm not talking about results of Sigmund Freud and some of the Mengele's work. I'm talking about the more advanced stuff. And so if you want to do some research on somebody that really brought this out to the attention of the American medical public, you might want to look up the work of Julius Axelrod. His work on norepinephrine neurotransmitters was from 1957 to 1974. I just want to share with you some of his, how he looked at it, and some from his viewpoint, rather than mine all the time. Neurotransmitters are hormones that are stored in nerve endings or terminals located within the brain. When neurotransmitters are released from nerve endings, they cross the synapse. Now, we talk about synapses a lot, and the synapses is the area between the nerves. And they send chemical messages from the brain across the nerve channels. Now, this is what is supposed to happen. However, when you start sending mixed signals across the nerve channels, and what I mean by mixed signals is that these are signals that are mixed not only with the body's energy, in other words, the energy from the within the human body generated in the brain, the electrolytes, which we've talked about on numerous shows. We're assuming you have electrolytes in your brain. You're not brain dead. There are a series of signals here that are harmonious in what are called extremely low frequency band or waves. And each one of these 0 to 18 hertz of the cycles per second of these waves, each one of these band of waves is a critical frequency. And if the critical frequencies within this band is altered or distorted, then the transmission frequency at the brain level is also altered or distorted. When Dr. Deagle and I had mentioned this, I think we mentioned it on the show today, on his show today, but we were talking about Rife towers, Rife transmitters, and the work of Rife. Rife had recognized the problem of outside energies, ELF energies, disingenuous to the natural harmonic frequencies of what the body needed to see. In the old days, for example, outside frequencies would aid neurotransmitter impulses would be the wind blowing through trees, the sound of birds, sound of streams, wind blowing across the prairie, the sound of an animal running like a horse galloping. Those kinds of things were harmonious natural sounds, and those were the backdrop of the five senses, the ears. You smelled nice clean flowers. So you had a different backdrop of the five senses feeding into the physical body along with the natural synaptic symphony of the neurotransmitter activity. So as man started to enter the machine age, what happened was he began to make steam engines, chug, 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 horrible sounds, sirens on old police cars, chasing bandits, guns, gunpowder, shooting, all those kinds of things. And these created stresses that became antagonistic to the natural realm of body frequencies. And so what happens is when these dances are taking place across the synapses at the receptor, molecules, there began to be a disingenuous vibration set up, and gradually this began to stress out the body, and over generations, a few decades and a few generations, we ended up with a receptor system in our brains that wasn't what God designed. It's what man mismanaged and didn't understand. So chemistry came into play. First, we began to study the chemistry of it. Receptor molecules in postsynaptic receiving nerving endings recognize presynaptic sending neurotransmitters. So in other words, the receptor needs to identify at the receiving end what is transmitted and turn that into a harmonious frequency. But what if your blood is crossing the blood-brain barrier? So what if your blood is full of psychotic toxins? You know, it doesn't work anymore. These receptors are specially shaped to receive the appropriate neurotransmitter. It's almost like it's like a ball game when the pitcher throws a baseball in a ball game. It comes to the catcher, and the catcher receives this in a catcher's glove. He doesn't use a first baseman's glove, which looks like a pincher of a crab. He uses a catcher's glove. Well, what happens is that's the way the brain works. To get the ultimate energy out of a brain, the shape, the physical shape of the synapses at the receptor sites have to be harmonious. This is one of the things that I've talked about our nuclear receptors. It reshapes the brain chemistry. When we talk about the DNA re-spiraling back with the use of the nuclear receptor, what we're doing is we're repairing this damage. This is one aspect of the nuclear receptor, but that's not what I'm trying to get across right now. So it looks like a key in a lock. So the receptor comes across, gets caught by the glove. Epinephrine, also known as adrenaline, is its chemical cousin. Norepinephrine, also called noradrenaline, are members of a class of hormones called catecholamines, which function as neurotransmitters in the sympathetic nervous system. Now, Julius Axelrod's interest in neurotransmitters was galvanized by two factors. One was the physical effect of the sympathomimetic amines on neurotransmitters on the behavior of organisms in general. The second was the emergence of a new class of controlled medications such as chlorpromazine and Ritalin. And Ritalin is the worst one for kids. And Axelrod turned his attention away from drugs which induced altered states of consciousness such as LSD. 25 toward the new class of drugs used to regulate schizophrenic and depressed states. That was what his work was about. He was not the first researcher to attempt to find the causal links between drug metabolism and mental health. In 1948, Seymour Keddy, acknowledged as the father of modern biochemical psychiatry, composed Rates of Oxygen Flow and Energy Metabolism in both schizophrenic and non-schizophrenic patients, but found no difference. In 1952, Humphrey Osmond and Abraham Hoffer at the University of Saskatchewan saw that niacin, B3, helped relieve symptoms of schizophrenia in their patients. Now, we immediately in the article about him, niacin comes up, B3. It's nicotinic acid. B3 is necessary in the formation of vasopressin, which causes two other hormones, amino acids, to come together to form. And this is called lysine and arginine. And as you've heard me preach almost at this point, for many shows, I'm always talking about how much lysine and arginine we've used in our formulas, because this is what is necessary to produce a catecholamic action in the brain so that we can now have a hormone that produces a good feeling. A good feeling. I always say to people, what's better than a good feeling? If you get a better answer, call me. Linus Pauling, I'm sure all of you know him, father of vitamin C, the polymath scientist intellectual who won the 1954 Nobel Prize in Chemistry, explained vitamin therapy as orthomolecular psychiatry. Now, as I said on the show the other night, the vitamin is the first unit of biochemistry that possesses light. Light comes in seven colors, seven frequencies, and sound is related to those same seven frequency. They're separated by octaves, okay, which are sevenths. Each one of these frequencies relates to a level of consciousness. Of all the hundreds of vitamins known to man today, they can all be broken down into seven different frequencies. One of the areas that I have tried to educate people into is the metabolism of these frequencies. If you're getting hit by outboard frequency distortions, as we discussed in the first part of my little discussion about Mr. Axelrod, and these distortions are bigger than your auric frequency or the frequency of what's going on in your body, then you don't have what we call auric offset, and you have what we call auric upset. So what's going to happen is your body's not going to produce complete chemistry, and if your body doesn't produce complete chemistry, you're going to have reactions and chemistry that's not complete. And when it's not complete, it's going to increase the aging process and the stress process. In 1956, Keddie presented the findings of Osmond and Hoffer at an MIMH seminar and picked Axelrod's curiosity. In 1957, Axelrod studied enzymes released from nerve endings along with neurotransmitter norepinephrine. One of these was the enzyme monoamine oxidase, also called MAO, which today MAO inhibitors are big things in psychiatric chemistry work. Since the early 1950s, scientists had found MAO to intercept the action of neurotransmitters and developed a class of antidepressant drugs known as the monoamine oxidase inhibitors, MAOIs. Now, you've heard me talk about those many times, that disable the enzyme and allow neurotransmitters to work properly. Now, why should they have to disable something? Because it's getting blocked by another frequency. If you, for example, look at your TV set, or if you look at your cell phone, or you look at your remote control unit, or you look at any, your stereo even today, or any kind of a device that has any kind of graded circuit, or your computer, you're going to see an FCC requirement for radiation output. But if you're working in a myriad of radiation frequencies that might be by FCC classified not to interfere with one another, that does not mean that they will not interfere with your body processes. So this is where we were in the 1950s. We were just starting to transmit radio waves. Television was new. Color television was on the infancy. High-powered radio transmitters. We were using all kinds of radar in those days. So all of a sudden, we had to stop down. We had to inhibit. And so therefore, they came up with a chemistry. Rather than shield the people or build the body to offset these negative influences, chemistry and science came up with the MAO inhibitor. That's simple as that. You couldn't make it any clearer, I don't think. Like many scientists of the period, Axelrod initially believed that these enzymes disengaged, now we're talking MOA inhibit enzymes, the neurotransmitter once it reached the postsynaptic terminal. Axelrod, however, disproved his theory in 1959 when he conducted a series of experiments to understand the distribution of norepinephrine in the tissue of cats. Axelrod concluded that MAO enzyme does not deactivate neurotransmitters, but in fact helps to increase the catecholamine levels in the nerve terminal. In the catecholamine levels, these are basically the sub-ingredients to L-dopamine. They are the ingredients to produce the hormone. Remember, the hormone is the first unit of biochemistry that possesses consciousness. Don't confuse it with the vitamin. The vitamin is the first unit of biochemistry that produces light. Now, I'm just going to stop here for a second, and I'm going to break down what a catecholamine really is, okay? Pronounced catecholamine, it's an amine derived from the amino acid tyrosine. Now, I oftentimes use tyrosine. I use, when I do therapy, sometimes I have people, let me tell you a little story. You might have heard this story before. When we started producing our radomes, which actually has a regulation of catecholamines and other amides in the brain, and it also causes a hydrogen reaction within water to detox the brain, to pull these poisons like tobacco and things that are lodged in there out of the brain. When I started producing the radome, people would say they would wear it for 2 or 3 months, and then they would come to me. And when they came to me, they would say, Dr. Fred, I've been wearing this radome. I had my mental acuity increased. My attention span increased. My depressive tendencies decreased. Because I've never met anybody that doesn't, even the Dalai Lama has been through depression. We all get it. All these things were working fine, and I had a much longer attention span. So they're telling me that the body was using a lot more vasopressin, because vasopressin is the prime mover as a tropic hormone coming from the pituitary gland that goes down into the rest of the body. It controls all of the body, including the norepinephrine, epinephrine production and regulation. So if we're playing around a lot with vasopressin, what I was beginning to see is if the pyramid worked, regulated, and produced, helped produce more. The body produces it, but realize that the biggest antagonist of vasopressin itself is automobile exhaust, carbon monoxide. So if the pyramid could be worn on the head while you're driving a car and offset that effect, which it did, why didn't it continue to do that? That was my question. So we got into some chemistry work, and we found out that the pyramid was causing the body to produce and use more vasopressin, lysine, arginine, and niacin, vitamin B3, which we started off in the very beginning of this conjecture with. But pretty soon, the pituitary gland was not used. It's like taking a person out to go running, and they never ran in 5 years. You can't run very far. But if you run every day, you can run for a great distance, and if you run on and on, you increase your stamina. The pituitary did not have the stamina to develop enough hormonal discharge and reuptake for the pyramid. So that's when we had to come out when our diagnosis and our laboratory analysis told us that they were deficient now. We were actually making people deficient in something that they should be overproducing, they were underproducing it. So that's when we decided to put the lysine and arginine and the free amino acids in the body so that there would be a base on which the body could now produce the proper amounts of vasopressin. So then we added the formula over to the pyramid, to the radome, and we said, okay, try this. And we'd send out these bottles of these vitamins, which we still have today, much more advanced, same thing. And people start taking the vitamins, and then 2 or 3 weeks later, they say, well, the pyramid's working again. So we had, bona fide, guaranteed results and a great feedback of a scientific fact. So when he produced pronounced catecholamine, an amine is derived from the amino acid tyrosine. For example, epinephrine is adrenaline, norepinephrine is noradrenaline, and dopamine. Now, they act as hormones or transmitters. Now, I'm going to talk a lot about dopamine in the future. Dopamine is something that when alcoholics drink alcohol, it's stimulated. It's another euphoric thing, and you can chase it with drugs. People do cocaine, and it does things to dopamine. We'll talk about that later. But the bottom line is dopamine starts to run out. As you get older, the body produces less and less and less of it. So you need to start putting in the amino acids and the proper enzymes like the B vitamins so that the body can also remanufacture more or larger amounts of that along with vasopressin. So we'll get into dopamine at a later time. There are a number of disorders involving catecholamines, including neuroblastoma, phenochromocytoma, chemodendrocyte, and the familiar paraganglioma syndrome, dopamine hydroxylase deficiency, and terahydrobromethrin deficiency. Now this, what happens, what basically we're saying here is these are things that produce tumors. These are carcinogenic reactions that happen in the body. Anytime you have a toma of anything, you're looking at a possible cancer or tumor. And the neuroblastoma is the second most common solid tumor in childhood after brain tumors. And by the way, cell phones are just great. And you're going to see a lot of neuroblastomas in people's heads very soon, not just children. The catecholamine metabolites, vanilla malic acid and homovanillic acid, can be measured quantitatively in the urine as a test for the disease. So we have a urine test. It's an acid test that we can look for to see if that's happening. Just like when we look at the protein levels for male hormones. So anyway, that's a little bit about catecholamines. They're very important. They're part of the basic chemistry of building the hormonal structure, especially the ones for the neuroreceptors and receptors like norepinephrine, the hormones in the body and the brain. Now, continuing on, in 1961, Axelrod announced that neurotransmitters do not merely stop working when they reach the postsynaptic nerve terminal. Rather, neurotransmitters are recaptured, reuptake by the presynaptic nerve ending and used again in later transmissions. As Axelrod told the New York Times that year, the decisive experiment took a couple of hours. Working out all the details afterward took 3 years. Axelrod explained that epinephrine is held in tissues in inactive form and is liberated by the nervous system when needed. From this research, Axelrod concluded that norepinephrine is the primary neurotransmitter of the parasympathetic nervous system. And that's kind of important because when you start looking at the parasympathetic nervous system, that is a nervous system that your spiritual antenna, your psychic abilities, your ability to do things psychically in life begins. It begins with that. Now, also, as we get further down the line, we're going to talk about lithium. We're going to talk about molybdenum and other trace minerals that are used by the medical profession to help treat stress disorders. But the bottom line is, this is all working through the parasympathetic nervous system. And realize that these are all trace minerals we're talking about, and the body is 5% minerals, and that controls 95% of the metabolism of the body. When you look at trace minerals, most people don't have them. So, is it no wonder at all that most people have some very serious issues with depression? I'm just talking about just about everybody. It just matters of how powerful is the rest of your metabolism in dealing with this, and how far along is your denial factor, admitting that you have some kind of a problem. I know I personally have to deal with it every day living in Southern California. I have Reich towers. You know, we call them irradiator systems. You could call them Reich towers if you want. I've got a whole house full of this stuff, and still, it sometimes questions, it pushes it to the limit. Prior to Axelrod's discovery, scientists could only account for about 3% of the epinephrine in the body, since at any given time, the vast majority of epinephrine is in transit. I also want to make, when he talks about reuptake, if you were to do cocaine or some drug to stimulate norepinephrine and epinephrine, because it's drug stimulated, your body's going to discharge it. So you're going to lose hormones out of your body. They're not being reused. Reuptake means to reuse them. And so as a result of that, you're going to have a deficiency, especially with crystal meth and all these things. Your body is going to be screaming for lysine and arginine and tyrosine and a lot of other different amino acids, but lysine and arginine is going to be crying out for it. And what's going to happen is you're not putting it in, you're doing drugs, you're going to have to do a huge amount of cocaine after a few weeks to do what you did on the first small amounts in the very beginning, to the point you reach so much depression, the drug doesn't work at all. Now you're going to crash. This goes for heroin, goes for any of these hardcore drugs. And so now you got to put these back in your body. Most people don't know that. So what they do is they go out and go on eating binges, and they go from being very thin to very fat. And then when they get big fat, then they start the whole process over, and this just completely erodes the DNA crystalline process. And if people that do this repeatedly, their faces look like they've been through a world war and they're only 30 years old. So this is where it takes you. So anyway, by the early 1960s, Axelrod's theory of neurotransmitter reuptake, scientists could trace about 98% of it, including that which is in transit. As Axelrod wrote in 1986, acetylcholine transmitters in sympathetic nerves are in a state of flux, continually being synthesized, released, metabolized, and recaptured. And in spite of these dynamic changes, the concentration of catecholamines in tissues remains at a constant level. That's unless you don't interfere with its processes. But unfortunately, the outside radiation and the pollution interferes with its processes, A, depleting the chemical reserves, B, destroying the genetic transmission intelligence, which we call electrical precursors, which we stabilize with our paradigm things, and C, a complete disharmonic discharge of toxins and chemicals that are produced that go down to the liver because of A and B working against each other. In other words, toxicity ensues when vibratory levels and chemistry are not complete. We call it discharge, and it creates carcinogenic waste, and you get cancer, obviously. And right now, what you're about to see on this planet, and we're just up on the threshold now, is a huge epidemic of malignant tumors inside people's heads from cell phones. It's just starting to happen now. In 1962, Axelrod and postdoctoral researcher Richard J. Wertmann initiated a series of experiments that showed exactly how tricyclics, a class of MAOI antidepressants, stop the MAO enzyme from transferring from neurotransmitter reuptake. In 1963, they published their now classic article, A Sensitive and Specific Assay of the Estimation of Monoamine Oxidase. In 1964, Axelrod and postdoctoral assistant Solomon Snyder concluded that different types of antidepressants work in a variety of ways. Some inhibit the MAO enzyme, some block neurotransmitters outright, and others perform such combination of inhibition and stimulation of neurotransmitter activity. These discoveries about neurotransmitters have enabled neuroscientists to predict accurately why drugs, including antidepressants and sympathetic amines, metabolize the way they do. Cocaine, for example, prevents postsynaptic nerve terminals from receiving norepinephrine, but presynaptic endings do not reuptake the excess neurotransmitters either. Instead, the extra norepinephrine floating between the synapses causes a chemical reaction that produces a temporary high. Similarly, amphetamines release the neurotransmitter dopamine, but block the postsynaptic terminal from receiving it, thus excessively stimulating the nervous system. These findings suggest that explanations for how medicinal or even recreational drugs work can be reduced to the effect or lack thereof that they have on norepinephrine and other neurotransmitters. And I recommend that you study more of his work. It's amazing work what this man has done and brought to the American world, actually the whole medical world. Now the next area I want to look at is adrenal malodory hormones. Now, these, of course, are what we were already talking about. Norepinephrine, epinephrine. These are things that are produced and secreted from the adrenal gland. First of all, that area, the adrenals, is the Buddha part of the body. Your diaphragm has gray matter, just like your brain. And it's the prana, or the energy, the etheric energy, and the oxygen, the life-giving energy that comes to your stomach. Most people don't even breathe properly. You should breathe with your stomach going out, causing air to go in, that balances the secretion and holding back of norepinephrine, epinephrine. Now, these, you know, depression oftentimes comes from other kinds of drugs in the body that affect the effects of the medullary hormones, okay? But in general, circulating epinephrine and norepinephrine released from the adrenal medulla have the same effects as target organs as direct stimulation by sympathetic nerves, although their effect is longer lasting. Additionally, of course, circulating hormones can cause effects in cells and tissues that are not directly innervated. The physiologic consequences of medullary catecholamine releases are justifiably framed as responses which aid in dealing with stress. These effects can be predicted to some degree by imaging what would be needed if, for example, we were trapped in Jurassic Park and the power went off. Now, let me just give you some effects that are mediated so you understand by these two hormones, epinephrine and norepinephrine. Okay. Increased rate and force of contraction of heart muscle. This is predominantly an effect of epinephrine acting through beta receptors. So now, if you're on heart medication, and you're taking beta blockers, what are you doing? You're upsetting your natural balance, lowering your blood pressure by blocking epinephrine, which would then increase your heart rate. Because what it does, epinephrine does, goes down to the ATP molecule and it produces the ATP cells in actin, which is an enzyme in the heart, and it says, go, go, go. Your heart starts increasing, but your arteries are clogged. And so what does modern medical science do? They give you beta blockers. And when they give you beta blockers, what happens is this energy going to the natural energy to make your heart work harder to push this blood flow through these blocked arteries is decreased. So what is it doesn't serve any purpose. Because what they don't want to happen, well, the reason they're giving you the beta blockers, they don't want you to have a rupture of an artery in your brain called a stroke. What a stupid way to go about it. I if you want to do that, I'd suggest a gold power dome. A gold power dome will lower blood pressure, but it will also start the detoxification process through the brain in its hydrogen ion reaction with water and start pulling out all of these toxins that are built up in these small arteries in the brain. Because remember, the arteries going through the brain are so small over a period of time, it acts like a giant filter because the arteries coming up from your heart and your lungs are very large. The blood flow is great. But you get into that circle of Willis, which I was talking about on the Saturday night show, and what happens is you don't get the throughput rate through the brain. So then that shuts down the electricity, the entire system. You know, your glands aren't working properly. You can't digest properly. You become anemic. You become allergic. 1,000 different things go on, you know. So we have to look at that, you know. We have to look at epinephrine. And use beta blockers. When friends of mine get on that stuff, you know, because they don't follow my process, you know, what things that I believe in are things that work for me anyway. And I try to help everybody, but I can't help everybody because a lot of people aren't educated enough or are conscious enough to understand what we do at Viridine. It's just amazing how this works. But epinephrine, don't block it. And that's what these beta blockers do. And that causes depression, I might add. That's another form of depression. Okay, constriction of blood vessels. Norepinephrine, the other one, okay, causes widespread vasoconstriction, resulting in increased resistance and hence arterial blood pressure. It raises it. You know, if I go back to the other one, you know, if you want to slow your blood pressure, take niacin. It's a vasodilator. You know, niacin B3. Take it. We put it in our vitamins. Take more. You might get a slight reaction from the histamine reaction. The histamines are in there in your body naturally to kill poisons that come in. They want to kill all the antigens that come in that you get every day. Antigens are proteins that are not good. And if you get too many antigens in your body, it builds up to a community of antigen. They call it a pathogen. When you have a pathogen, you're sick. You're theoretically clinically sick when you're diagnosed to have so many antigens that you have a pathogen. That's why I just so much talk about detoxing with the power dome on the head, sleeping in the pyramid. The pyramid detoxes your entire body. It takes 3-4 months. So what? Sleeping in it, it's well worth it. That's what our big systems do. Then along with it, take niacin. Take our vitamins. You know, take aloe vera. Go buy extra aloe vera. There's so many peripheral things. And the beautiful thing about periphery at this point is that periphery enhances what you're doing. So if you're in a pyramid sleeping with your capstone, your orb, and your laser up there, you're detoxing your brain, your entire body, your liver is being restored, your kidneys are being restored, your synapses are firing at the right rates at night, and you're having these wonderful, very colorful dreams. You're not having nightmares. Nightmares are only created by, once again, a failure of the auric field to detox the body during the night process of detoxification and to allow negative astral entities to come in, because that's what the whole Ayurvedic medicine scene is about. If your liver is toxic, your synapses in your brain don't fire properly, your whole resonance of your magnetic structure of your aura goes off, and you start attracting low-frequency vibrational beings that thrive in a beautiful, enlightened environment of your toxicity. And we call them demons, you know. So this is what happens. so amazing if people just could understand what they do to themselves over a period of time. It's so sad, and that's how this stuff works. I mean, it's all vibration. But like in our living room, when we do a seminar, we'll have people come here from all over the world for one of our seminars. Sai Baba's been here physically, and he's very famous, and he's got lots of people that he works with. He liked the energy here. And when the energy here is sanctified, and we've got pictures on our website, in a positive way, we have beautiful entities appear in the living room. That's why I have that camera out there now in the living room. And we've had some amazing things happen if you've been watching the camera. The other night, for example, we were having dinner in the kitchen, and all of a sudden this 50-pound Omnion, which hangs down about 8 feet, suspended over the vortex, you know, turned into a pendulum and started swinging furiously on a 3-foot swath, 3 foot this way, 3 foot that way, back and forth for about a half an hour. Nobody was near it. There was no wind. Although it was cold outside, the windows were closed. This thing was swinging violently. If anybody was watching the camera that night, they just seen phenomena start all by itself because it was there. Going further on now, constriction of blood vessels, okay, we talked about that. Dilution of bronchioles, okay. If your norepinephrine rates are not right and your bronchioles are not dilating properly, two things happen. One is that you don't get the proper transference of oxygen to your cells and doesn't pick it up properly out of the air. The air is only 17% oxygen these days, or even less. Secondly, your body does not pick up the carbon monoxide that your spent cells have produced to send it back out to the atmosphere so the plants of the world can inhale that to produce more oxygen, therefore keeping the cycle of the world working properly. It's like the world. So the second thing that happens is it upsets the Bohr effect. The Bohr effect is a hemoglobic effect in the body that works in such a way that the cell, the receptor part of each cell in the mitochondrion, absorbs oxygen. But if that receptor part of that cell, because the cell in itself is like a miniature brain, it has its own intelligence, it's just different parts of the cell, they have different names, and different bodies of energy, and if that gets upset, then at the cellular level, there's no longer a proper discharge of carbon dioxide and pickup of carbon or oxygen. When you look at the whole body as a group of cells and working all in unison, it's called the Bohr effect. It's not after Niels Bohr, the physicist. The Bohr effect is another effect of cellular transfixion in the body. So with the Bohr effect starts to go askew, the Bohr effect is resonant once again to calcium and vitamin D metabolism at the heart, producing actin. And so now you also start to get heart problems. So now because of a dilation of the bronchioles or a constriction of the bronchioles, you're actually affecting your heart, not from blood pressure or arterial, you know, plaque buildup or the flow of the pipes, but from an electronic standpoint, which has a medical term. This causes depression. Okay? Stimulation of lipolysis in fat cells. This provides fatty acids for energy production in many tissues and aids in the conversion of dwindling reserves of blood glucose. If, once again, norepinephrine balance is off, what happens is the body will not metabolize fatty acids. And what does it do? It produces toxins. It produces a saturated fat, which then leads to an arterial buildup. Okay, increased metabolic rate. Oxygen consumption and heat production increase throughout the body in response to epinephrine. We work a lot with epinephrine with our green emerald in our receptor that works through the thyroid. This regulates heat production. We've had a lot of cases where we've had metabolic rates high or low. They're askew. We've had tremendous luck helping balance that energy with the use of the emerald receptor. Medullary hormones also promote breakdown of glycogen in skeletal muscle to provide glucose for energy production. This also means production of a healthy red blood cell. Dilation of the pupils. Particularly important in situations where you are surrounded by velociraptors under conditions of low ambient light. Inhibition of certain non-essential processes. An example of it is an inhibition of gastrointestinal secretion and motor activity. And now here, you've heard of people, they're getting into the, they're upset, they've had an emotional experience, they've lost their appetite. Well, this is what we're talking to. When you lose your appetite, you're going to get constriction because of a higher production of norepinephrine. And norepinephrine causes basal constriction. Basal constriction, of course, works through the stomach for digestion, so you're going to end up getting a tighter stomach, an uptight stomach. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of where we're coming from with this. Now, let's look at the clinical picture of depression, how a clinic would define it. The clinical definition varies from one depressive episode to another in any given patient. This suggests the major depression, despite its various symptom profiles, may have a common underlying cause. If so, clinically evident symptoms profiles may result from differing patterns of neurotransmitter abnormalities in the various brain regions. Consonant with such a hypothesis, a host of deficiencies in serotonin, norepinephrine, dopamine, gamma-aminobutyric acid, GABA, and peptide neurotransmitters, or trophic factors, such as brain-derived neurotrophic factor, somatostatin, and thyroid-related hormones have been proposed as contributing to depression. Almost everything that we address at Paradigm deals with, in one way or another, the neurotrophic factor and the distribution across the synapses of the brain. It's so amazing. It's so amazing you don't have to take chemicals, because this is not a chemical problem. It's a chemical result. It's so clearly spelled out in the psychiatric journals. Although no specific abnormalities in genes that control neurotransmitter or hormonal synthesis or release have been identified with certainty, because they can't identify the processes, because they don't understand electrical precursing energies. They don't understand the seven levels of consciousness. They don't understand what red does, stimulates this gland. Green stimulates the thyroid. Red, of course, being the will. You know, get out of bed, let's get going. You know. They don't understand that compassion is yellow down there in the solar plexus where the norepinephrine, epinephrine are created and dispensed. They don't understand any of that. So they just randomly throw chemicals into your body and they try to, you know, like playing pool, get something in the corner pocket because that's a score. Genes and stress are hypothesized to alter neuron size and the extent of neuronal processes, which production of new neurons and neural repair in major depression. Elevated cortisol levels, which characterize some moderate to severe depressive states, may be associated with the reduction in hippocampal volume, which appears to be promotional to the duration of the untreated depression. This process has now been likened to the loss of neurons similar to that mediated by corticosteroids in animal models of stress and suggested by magnetic resonance imaging studies, MRIs, if you heard them, that have reported lower levels of N-acetyl aspartate and a neuron marker in depression. Now, major depression, and this is where I'm going to talk about LSD in a minute here for a second. Major depression in response to stressful situations, as reported as common among persons harboring a variant in the primal 5 regulatory region of gene encoding the serotonin transporter protein 5-HTT, the target of selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs. That's what all of psychiatric treatment is about, mostly. It's selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. These are the drugs they give you, the drugs that modifies promoter activity. This variant in the 5-HTT gene-linked promoter region, 5-HTTLPR, modify its promoter activity associated with lower transcriptional efficiency of the 5-TTH gene, ultimately leading to the fewer copies of the messenger RNA encoding the serotonin transporter protein. What they're talking about is they're slowing down the ability of the body to process its brain frequencies. In other words, to process, oh, I'm scared. Oh, I feel good. I'm hungry. How long does it take from the time you smell this wonderful casserole cooking to the time you suddenly realize you really are hungry? By slowing down the neurotransmitter time or inhibiting reuptaking the serotonin inhibitors, by slowing that down, that's supposed to make you normal. Because what they're doing is they're deadening the stimulus. Now, this is the killer in this one. This lower expressing variant may be associated with amygdala mediated hyperresponsiveness of young children to frightened or frightened faces that can facilitate encoding of painful memories, leading to stress sensitivity in childhood, therefore into transferring over to adulthood. What that's talking about is one of my major things that I've talked about in all the years at Paradigm in what we do. And that becomes the core of what we're talking about here. When you're a child and your metabolism is going very fast, you're reproducing easily 90 million cells per second. When you're producing 90 million cells per second, your body's on a high vibration, you're feeling euphoric and great. As a child, all of a sudden you witness an argument. Now, as an adult, you could see an argument between your father and mother. But as a two-year-old, seeing that same argument with the same intensity, it's overwhelming. It's huge. It knocks you off, completely off your plate. It can leave scars into your body, into your psyche, in some people, if they can't process the spirit of it, for the rest of your life. And these are the kids that typically become alcoholics and have all kinds of different other kinds of problems as they get older. The same thing happens when you take lysergic acid, dimethylamide. All right, when you take dimethylamide, LSD 25, as an adult now, it sort of reduces you to a child. You suddenly have the same sensitivities that you had when you were a kid. It almost makes you like a child. It makes you childlike. Because LSD, if you look at it chemically, and you can go on the internet and look at this, you'll see that it's dopamine levels, and you'll see that it very much looks like serotonin. So when you start inhibiting the reuptake of serotonin, you're starting to play around with the core, the actual core of your emotional stability, and that's the wrong way to do it with chemistry. So acid, LSD, is the wrong way. It's to get it. Well, people took acid to get back to their childhood, to get back to that awareness, because they had become worn down by the stress of society. They had become worn down by the emotions of society being askew. Everybody lives in shame because of dysfunctional families. They've been worn down by carbon monoxide poisoning on this planet. They've been worn down by the stress of sirens, societal stress, managerial stress, governmental regulation, all of these things, family obligations, living beyond their means, all of these things. And that transfers over to the lack of spiritual abilities. I mean, people have these wonderful experiences on LSD, these huge spiritual experiences. Why can't they have them naturally? Because naturally, the neurotransmitter ability has been so retarded, so slowing down, as they've showed in that article, the 5-TTH reaction, so slowed down already by toxins. And even in that position, it creates drugs, you know, it creates depression. Now they throw drugs in on you on top of that. There's no way you can get in touch with your autoimmune system and your consciousness, because you're fighting to keep your mentality working and properly. So these things are things that you need to really understand. That is why we were so successful originally with the silver power domes and the pyramid family, and freeing the brain up, allowing it to run its own race. It's almost like you're putting your head inside of a Faraday cage, which blocks radiation. And then when we got into the systems, it made such a difference living inside of one of these systems. I used to tell people, someday the outside is going to be so toxic that you're going to have to go inside just to feel normal into your house. And people used to laugh. Well, they don't laugh anymore. So now we environmentalize the insides of people's homes to protect them from the prying satellite technology, the ELF, the HARP, and all these other kinds of things. Well, along in our society, a few years ago, another thing started to happen. It started to show up with women. Women are a higher vibration than men. And we call it PMS. PMS effect in women is something that's not been around forever. Women go through a hormonal change in life to work on their spiritual side. But if they're going through the hormonal change and they're so accustomed to being able to be fertile and have children and can't because the time is over with, maybe they haven't gotten their lives together enough to have the children, or maybe they wanted to have them but they never could justify them. There's so many reasons that women go through what they go through. And I'm not a woman, and I'm sure women out there can correct me on a lot of different levels. But the bottom line is they're depressed, and they're not satisfied with their lives. And so they become depressed for a long period of time, and you just can't break out of it. Well, this is the biochemistry of the high yin spirit coming directly abreast of the male ego energy that's created this polluted science. Because 99% of the pollution out there is created by the male force, the male driving force of the Industrial Revolution. Remember, women didn't even start working in the workforce till early 20s and 30s. They weren't even considered equal with men in the workplace. It was all about men making pollution. It really was at those times. And as a result, women now are paying the price for it because spiritually they're not fulfilled. Women are not being spiritually fulfilled in their lives because there's too much blockage from the yang side of the way this world runs. And the yang side of this has created world wars. The last two world wars were created by men, not women, for example. I think that the wars that we're presently having now were created by men. I mean, remember Afghanistan, the women had to wear those burqas. The women couldn't even have their face shown, so they weren't the problem. They were being suppressed. In Pakistan, they were being suppressed. I mean, it's sad how mankind, especially in the undeveloped countries, have treated women. And this has a summation because one female to another, doesn't matter whether you're here or in Africa or over in Pakistan. Bottom line is women have feedback and inner resonance between their auric frequencies, their auric fields. And so this works on the psyche through the planetary, you know, we mutually induce our energy into the planetary field, the Earth's aura. And so the female side, the yin side of the Earth's aura, is completely out of balance. So when some poor woman is going through the natural hormonal change, and realize our life, you know, every 7 years of our lives, we go through serious hormonal changes from puberty to adult, you know, to adulthood and beyond, just the extreme examples of those changes. The women suffer pretty much harder than the men. They're more noticeable. They're more demonstrative of their emotions. Men suppress those. So men, when they go through their change, they just get out. They go out and get DUIs and they do stupid things and they beat their wives up and they get in trouble. Men that have been normal up to some degree or balanced or behaving in society suddenly become incredibly out of control, and nobody seems to know why, and that usually occurs in their late 40s, early 50s, until they adjust to their change of life. But the women, on the other hand, don't hold the emotion back so much, and so we begin to see it, and we've labeled it PMS. We've done a lot at Paradigm to help people with these problems, especially females. As a matter of fact, I would say that women, before recent times, have been the majority of our customers because they're sensitive. They understand the things that we try to do to them. They're very receptive to the receptors. They're very receptive to some of the other processes that we have. And we can definitely, we've been able to prove through different techniques of breathing and exercise and things that we do at Paradigm how to lower the traumatic effects of a non-spiritual completion of a life. As a matter of fact, once you realize what the problem is, when women realize that their spiritual motives haven't been met, their spiritual goals have not been met, it could be a controlling husband, you know. It could be maybe a child, you know, sometimes it's a child that's got some kind of a mental deficiency, and then it takes extra time to deal with this child. It's autistic or whatever, so the woman pretty much loses her identity, because it's usually the women that are raising the kids in the first place anyway, you know, at home most of the time. And so something, some factor has taken away from her growth, her spiritual growth. Might not always, you know, a cause that would be apparent that she did it. It would be appeared to be some outside cause, but it might not be an outside cause. It's karma, period. But bottom line is, the appearance doesn't matter. The fact is, it happened and it wasn't fulfilled. So it's really a delight to help these women get back on the path, not feel disparaged and discouraged, and regain their spiritual roots. I mean, look at Mother Teresa, for example. There's a woman that I don't think had a PMS problem. She had every other kind of problem. She never had enough to eat. She was overworked, but she kept moving straight ahead. If there ever was a role model for a male or a female, it would have been Mother Teresa, I would think. I mean, she was pretty acknowledged. She came out of nowhere and did everything. She had nothing to work with, and that made her do more of everything, and she had no way to communicate with the world. The world found her. And that principle demonstrates that in a microcosm of a person living in their home somewhere, that they can reach these heights easily, male or female, if they just hold their guns to their spiritual beliefs and move forward with them. And so all of these things, I've talked about the chemistry, and I'll probably continue on with this thing in depression, because I feel that it's an important factor to cover. I don't think that in this evening, tonight, I covered it enough, but I wanted to dig in a little deeper than I did the other night, because I think it's a very big thing that we have to deal with, because I know a lot of you want to come over to the other side and have the experience of the extraterrestrials, and you want to have the experience of these divine inner beings and outer beings and the angels. And some of you are already having that, I'm sure. But everybody should have that. So what I want to do is be part of a contributing factor in your life to make that possible for you if it hasn't happened. And if it has, I want to give you some more. So with that, we'll start winding down this show here. Remember, this is Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. You can give us a call at 1-800-729-2603. You can type in Dr. Fred Bell on the search engine, and you'll find me there. Or you can listen to my Saturday Night Live show. And again, I want to welcome Dr. Deagle. I call him Wild Bill Deagle, to my show. I think he's great. I think he's going to be a great asset for BBS Network Radio. With that, I do a good evening. Good night, Irene.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.